We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
But before we begin, over on Insane in the Fembrane, I have a smashing guest in the shape of Helen Rutter. Now, Helen Rutter is not only the wife of Rob Rouse, who was on the podcast last week, also she's an author in her own right, and she's got a book coming out called The Boy Who Made Everyone Laugh. It's a brilliant book for kids. I had a read of it. It's absolutely brilliant. It's about a young lad called Billy Plimpton, and Billy Plimpton has a stammer. But he wants to be a stand-up comedian, and he's like, how can I become a stand-up comedian even though I have a stammer? And it's how Billy works his way through it, and it's a fantastic book. So get yourselves over there to Insane in the Fembrane, and Helen will tell you all about it. So back to Insane in the Membrane. But before we begin, we will begin eventually, we've got five-star reviews. Thank you to everyone for leaving us five-star reviews. We've got five-star reviews from Vet Nurse Lisa. We've also got Jim Harrett. We've got Darkest Decadence, Danny P40, Johnny W, Jade MUA. Thank you so much for your wonderful reviews. Five stars. I love it. It's good to see. And anyone who left us a one star, I'm sorry. it's not for everyone. But thank you for everyone that is enjoying it. And thank you very much for doing that, taking the time. Really appreciate it. I think Vet Nurse Lisa is also Panda Lisa. On other things, I imagine. I'm assuming. Let's find out. Anyway, Insane in the Membrane, here we are. It's a strange old time. Every time I start these now, it's like, it's a strange old time. It's beyond strange, isn't it? It's knackered. We're just getting into the second lockdown. This is when we recorded this. And I don't know, I had to walk down to the studio today in Tunbridge Wells, and it was weird. It feels like a Sunday. Like last night we were out, and it felt like a Christmas Eve yesterday. Everyone was getting ready for things, and it was a really weird feeling because, you know, there was a Christmas feel. It was odd. And then walking down today, all the shops are shut, and you're just, yeah, it's like an old school Sunday like it used to be when I was a kid. But, you know, there's other people that aren't experiencing that, and they're experiencing having a terrible time. And to those people, I hope you're okay. I hope you come out the other side and you're all right. You know, it's just, yeah. And then you've got the American elections, and we're all panicking about, yeah, you know, seeing who's going to win. Hopefully good will prevail, and the right person will become the next US president. Which is a thing that we didn't really care about when I was a kid. You know, you kind of were aware of who the president was, but it wasn't such a big deal. You know, we didn't sit up all night watching watching the start, the news. You know, mind you, you couldn't. The telly finished at half ten, and we all had to stand up and stand up next to the telly to do the national anthem. We'd all be in bed. How mad is that, that we used to have the national anthem at the end of the telly when half ten, and then it was just the national anthem, and then we'd all have to go to bed. It's mad. Crazy times. My guest this week is a fantastic comedian who I've worked with many times. Someone that I say this all the time. You know, nearly everyone I work with, I kind of, oh, yeah, God, they're really cool, really cool. I love comedians. I do. I think because I just relate to them, I just feel they're my people. You know, we're all a bit fucked, and we're all misfits. They don't really fit in, and I just feel like comedians just feel like family to me. You know, you get on with everybody, you don't get on with some other people, you know, it's just family, isn't it? It's family. But my guest this week is Russell Hicks. Russell Hicks is an American comedian, been over here for a few years, and I've been trying to get him on for ages. It just didn't happen, and then it has, and here he is, Russell Hicks, and we had a really nice chat. We covered a lot. We talk about the election, but we didn't really stick to that, you know. We went off on all manner of things, and it was a real joy to have him on and have a chat with him. So coming up in a minute is Russell Hicks.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
A podcast from producerpaul.co.uk.
Yeah, you ever do that? You ever agree to someone's podcast? You show up and it's like they put like an iPhone in front of you and you're like, oh, okay. All right.
It's happened a couple of times, yeah.
And you go, and then it doesn't go out. You never see it come out. I've done 3-hour podcasts and then I've never seen them come out. I'm like, was that for your personal collection?
All right. We've got all the toys here, Russell.
Yeah, we've got everything, man.
And we're going to put this out this afternoon at 6. We're fucking epitome of efficiency.
Same day?
Same day, man. Brother. This is going straight out, man.
It's the modern world. All right.
I haven't had my phone on all day, so I have no idea what the fuck is going on.
It's looking good, man. You're talking about the election?
Of course, mate. Let's just get into it. Come on. It's looking good.
It's looking good, man. I mean, like, I think he's won. I mean, this is where it's like I'm getting conflicting information, but it looks like he's winning these battleground states, which is incredible. Like these states that, you know, usually vote Republican. And so Trump, all I know is Trump is flipping out and it's, you know, it sounds like he's losing. So,
yeah, man,
it looks like he's losing. I feel it. I mean, the numbers are good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? You kind of go, I want to believe it, but I don't want to jinx it by believing it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's looking real good, but I think he's going to fight it and drag it out so long.
Yeah.
That it could be, you know, who knows how long.
Oh, he's not. Yeah, he's not going to just accept it, is he? He's not. He's just going to.
He's fighting it now. They're suing.
Yeah.
States. They're suing.
Fucking hell! This is what happens when you get businessmen instead of actual politicians in.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's not even good at business. The fuck.
I know this isn't real estate, man.
No.
That's the thing, man. He's like, I think he's used to like starting. He tries to, his business model was like, you know, go all out, but if it doesn't work, you can walk away from it, like an asset, you can burn it down, you can sell it,
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't do that with a country.
He's tried though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been listening to, I've been watching Cody Johnston on YouTube. I don't know if you know him. Mm-mm. And, man, it's just some more news show. And he goes, the movies have been warning us about Trump for years, decades. Every villain from Super Mario Brothers onwards has been based on Trump. He goes, and we didn't listen.
Well, Back to the Future too.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that. It's like no one's fucking listened forever.
Yeah.
It's in the movies, man.
Because it would have helped if he had a Hitler mustache. If he just had the mustache, then maybe people would be like, oh, okay, yeah, we get it.
Yeah. But something we can actually go, yes, that's evil.
Something we can hang on to. Yeah. Even then, I think he would have just brought it back in the South. You'd see people with the little mustache like... It's back in style.
Yeah.
You know,
I've already seen people on some people I follow on Instagram from the South, and they're already saying, "Look, there was one this morning. He's going, look, if you're, I'm going to double check where you're from before I accept your fucking friend request on here, and blah blah blah." They're already shutting down, like if Trump doesn't get in, you're like, oh, fuck, man, what do you see that others don't see?
What do you mean they're shutting down?
He goes, I need to look after myself and what. Basically, he's a Trump supporter, and Trump doesn't look like he's getting back in.
Yeah.
So he's just shutting up shop to anybody else that isn't a Trump supporter. And yeah. You're just like, the fuck do you see? What do you see?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I haven't been to the South that much, but, no. You know, it's, But that's another reason. That's why we're kind of divided in America, is because like it's so big, we don't actually interact with each other that much. So
no,
we should. That's sort of my theory. I've often said that a lot of people in California are like, oh, why do they vote this way? And the way that it's set up in America is you have to live in that state. So I'm like, well, how about all the actors in LA admit that they're not going to make it and move to Georgia, like move there and do something actually good with your life, like set up, you know, little oxygen cafes and yoga studios and flip the state.
That's it. Yeah. Do it that way.
Honestly, there should be a mass migration from California. It'd be better for you and me. Like we could get out there, maybe get an audition or something and free up the parking spaces. There's so much dead weight in Hollywood. Like we should just do a mass poll. We should just be like, okay, who hasn't actually, who says they're an actor in this town, but hasn't worked in the last 10 years?
Yeah.
Sorry. You're being deported to Florida.
Yeah. You're going to go and work on a golf course. Off you go.
Sorry, mate. You say you're a voiceover artist. You've been working at Denny's for 15 years.
You grew up in California, didn't you?
Yeah, I grew up in San Diego.
Yeah, right. See, what was that like? I know someone else is from San Diego, and they love it.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was. I suppose I grew up. You know, I knew nothing else, so it took me a while to realize how different it was from the rest of the country and what a privilege it was actually. It's just so laid back that, you know, it's weird when you, I suppose from the outside you look at it, you go, oh, it's just this laid back whatever, but when you're inside there's a lot of nuance to it, like it's actually this weird sort of mix of hippies and beach bums, but also like Republicans who go there to retire.
Right,
like it's
okay.
It's a little conservative, actually. A lot of San Diego.
Yeah.
But yeah, I suppose like when I got into my early 20s, though, I started to be annoyed with San Diego's attitude because it's just so. It's like people love it so much, and it's just there's just this general attitude like where, like. They like this was I talked about this the last time I went back. You'll just get these guys who walk around in like flip flops and sandals, and they've done nothing with their lives whatsoever. But they're like, but you know what? The sun's shining. I think I'm doing all right, bro. Like just this.
I love that.
Yeah, there's just this general arrogance of, and it's like okay, and that's why people hate California is because just. The that attitude of like the so insular, but No, it's great, man. I mean, that was what was great is when I eventually moved to LA, I could just go 2 hours back home, and it's a real breather from the fast pace of like Hollywood and Los Angeles. So.
It's so far. I remember going to LA, and as you're flying in, you can't see the end of it. It's just so vast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you fly into London, you can kind of see the green, and you can see where London ends, but LA just spreads out it's endless.
It's a megalopolis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a mix of people. London is stressful. London, I've said this before, London doesn't give a fuck if you can keep up with it or not.
No.
Like, there's all this, I'm going to go to London and seek my fortune. And if you don't hit the ground running, London will just spit you out. It's like, no, this is what we do, and you can either keep up or fuck off.
Well, yeah, that's something I've been trying to talk about is how one thing I've noticed, and this goes for America, this is anywhere, is it's ironic that the big cities, you have a choice, basically. If you live in a big city, the people are super woke, okay? But they're rude.
Yes.
All right?
Yeah.
But then you go to a small rustic village, oh, they're so nice to your face. But they all are racist and vote for crazy, honestly, like... You're in London, everyone's like, soup, I'm organic, I'm like, rights for everyone, but like, they will fucking run you over and throw you in the street if they need to get to Boots and you're in their way, right? Yeah. And then like, you go to America and you go to like a little cafe, because I have been to the South a little bit. Dude, go to a cafe in like Georgia, oh my God, you've never just, how y'all doing, have a seat, sit down, you know, but then... They're like, all right, tell all your white friends. Thank you. And I don't know. It's just kind of like, which one do you want? But
Yeah. I remember I was in Poughkeepsie. And I mean, which isn't South, obviously. But I'd only ever been to New York before. And so coming out of, going further up the state and into the towns. It was a place called Friendly's. And it was just this fucking, I got there and they were just so friendly, I couldn't handle it. I get it, yeah, all right, yeah, cool, back off a little bit. You know, yeah. It's like, but I'd rather that than, yeah, just over here where they almost ignore you.
Yeah, it's brutal. And I went to New York and thought, I'm ready for this. Like, I've been living in London 6 years. I hadn't been to New York City in a while, and I was like, I went like 2 years ago, and I said, bring it, dude. Like, I've lived in London, and New York completely blindsided me. Like, it was, you know, it was even rougher.
Yeah.
I was just in the street for like, I was there, I mean, I was there for an hour, and some guy tried to fight me. And I just thought, damn, man, this truly is, you know, this is the Big Apple.
Yeah,
this is,
man,
even worse, but, you know. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I remember trying to ask directions and this, and I didn't really think. I was doing Dangerfields and I was came out of there, and then I'm trying to find the subway and this woman was walking towards me and I wasn't thinking. I just went up and I was like, excuse me. And she nearly jumped out of her skin and then was like, walked right round me. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not doing anything. I just want to know where the subway is. It's up there. Like, really, like, oh. Yeah. And I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, really. Yeah, it was like the fear factor was... It was amplified.
Yeah, and the thing is, and I used to say this about Los Angeles too, is once you get used to it, like once you get to the point when you've lived there and you go, oh, it's not so bad, that's because you've turned into one of them.
Yes.
You don't even know
assimilated.
It. So when you live in Hollywood and you start to go, hey, this isn't so bad, to the outside world, you've now become like a teeth-glowing mania. You don't even know it. You're probably starting to say things like, yeah, like my chakras are just really aligned and things are going so well. So that's when you've got to go. And when you're in New York, like, you've probably become a complete asshole and you're like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, man.
Which is, I loved London. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I became one of them.
I think that's what it is. You do. You subconsciously assimilate in order to survive. You know, you don't want to stand out from the crowd. You want to just be part of it. It's like, I know people that they live 15 miles from London and they rarely go. You know, they'll go and see the Christmas lights, but they won't go. They go like, oh, I don't know, it's too much.
But yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't wait to get to the city. It was really like, there just seems to be more stuff I want to do.
London's the best. I love that city. We just moved out, you know. We're living in Kent now. We live in Rochester.
I know Rochester.
Yeah, yeah, we just moved out. Like, and it's really a weird change. I mean, we did it just, I just needed a little bit of space, and I wanted to, you know, it's a quick train, all that stuff. You know, anybody who moves out of London, they know all the stats. It'd be like 37-minute train, you know, 13 quid, dude. Like it.
Yeah.
I think Carl Donnelly's got a great joke about that. But yeah, but I miss being in London because I really believe that that city, man, you could just walk outside. And if you go into the middle of the city with absolutely no plan, you'll end up doing something.
Yes.
Phenomenal. Like, just, you'll just do something amazing. You'll end up in some museum having a coffee somewhere. It's the best.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, man.
We're recording right now?
Yeah, man.
Then let's get into some mental health, dude.
Well, this is the thing. This is like mental health. This is what we do. We ease into it.
Yeah, all right.
You know,
we
don't just sit there and just list our ailments. We just
gentle touch, man.
Because things like you've already hit the nail on the head. Like moving out from the city to a place like Rochester. And I know Rochester. I kind of, my kids are from Gravesend, which is just up the road, and so I've spent a lot of time down there. I've worked in Rochester, so I know it. But it's got like the main high street, which is all this like old. It's almost like Shakespeare town, you know. You've got this little bit, but then you've got. It used to be up the hill, top of Star Hill, was where all the prostitutes used to be.
That's what someone said. That's where we live. We live up near where the prostitutes live.
Yeah, yeah, along the top road. Yeah,
and. You know, I can tell you some of the money I get paid to gig, I think I'm keeping that tradition alive. I'm a whore.
We all are, man. We're all selling ourselves.
Use that clip.
Just that one soundbite.
I'm a whore.
Russell Hicks, everybody.
Whore. But yeah, man, that's what I hear. But it's nicer now, so it's always the areas that are the roughest. That I think, you know, I guess it's like, it's weird, isn't it? Like, yeah, if you live in the city, they'll be like, oh, that was 30 years ago. That was the worst area ever. And now it's one of the, it's quite nice. It's, you know?
Yeah, I think everybody's moving away from the city. Everyone realizes they don't need to be in the city, you know, especially now working from home and things like that. And when we moved out, we moved to Leigh-on-Sea, which is near Southend. Essex, and I didn't realize how tense I was until I was sat in the lounge, and I realized my fists were clenched, and I'm like, why am I sitting like that? It's because I was just so, I was so city and just tense, and it took a while for that to subside.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of escaping, like, just these preconceived notions of like how you. You know, you're fed this line of like how you have to, especially like when I grew up in America, I remember from a very early age, like them saying, this is how you do it. Okay. You work hard and you have a job and you move up and you do well and then you retire. And I just remember from early on thinking that sounds like a line of shit, man. Like, I mean, it just sounded like a real waste of your life. And also, when I engaged in that world, it just wasn't, you know, it didn't work that way, you know? Yeah. And I think like you talk about the South and all that and the people who voted for Trump, I get it because that was they believed it, bless their heart. They believed what I, a long time ago, was like, yeah, right. What a load of shit. Like, you know, it's like even when you have a job in America, they tell you that. They go, we're all a family. They use all this weird corporate speak. And I'm like, no, we're not. Like, we're not. You don't care.
It's good that you had that mindset.
Well, so I was always like, it was like a grifter. Like, it was like, I would just try to figure out. And I think a lot of comedians are like that, where we find loopholes and we alternate ways of existing in this system. So. You go, okay, wait a minute. Okay, so I know I've got to pay the rent, but what if I get rid of my car, move in with these seven other people in a flat in Hollywood? My rent is only this. I get this much for gigs. Boom, I'm living a free life. You know what I mean, Shelly? And then that leads to like, came to London, and then little things like what you said when you go to Leigh-on-Sea. That's another way of like figuring out a way to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't have that. I always, because it was the adults. The adults were telling us this. So I was like, well, it must be true because the adults have said this. Yeah. And it wasn't until later. It wasn't until I started doing comedy and I went, the fucking adults didn't know. They didn't have a clue. They didn't know what they were doing. They're just believing the bullshit as well. They don't fucking know. And it really took the blinkers off when I started comedy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think I always, you know, Reservoir Dogs. You've seen that movie?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You know, in the end of the movie, I always feel like comedians are Mr. Pink, where everybody has shot themselves, and then he just sort of sneaks out with
the bag
diamonds
and fucks off. Yeah,
I like to think he got away. I think he gets killed on the outside, but like that to me is the comedian. He sort of sits back, lets it all play out, and then he just woo, he just runs out with the diamonds.
Oh man, but I think going back to Trump a little bit, that I was watching the video of John Lydon, Johnny Rotten, and everyone was slagging him off, going, oh, I can't believe he's a Trump supporter. Is that? But when you actually listen to what he was saying, he was explaining why the people, what Trump actually spoke to the people, you know, the working class and the disenfranchised people, the people, do you know what I mean? He kind of spoke to a band of people in America that felt ignored, I guess.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't necessarily sticking up for Trump, but he was explaining why he was so popular.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I agree. I understand completely why he's so popular. I think even maybe they wouldn't, they might, he was the only person, even if it was like just a surface thing that he was saying.
Yeah,
these
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
Because the irony is that he's speaking to them saying you've been forgotten, but he himself is a product of that system, which has kept them down. So
yeah,
it's kind of like, but from their perspective, they're like, well, he's the only one really saying it. So, you know,
yeah.
But so I do totally get it.
Well, it's a shame, but yeah.
Yeah, I do get it, man.
But so growing up in San Diego.
Yeah.
And then you said it's a chilled out place and it's, you know, it's pretty cool. And so anyone else on the outside would be going, well, what mental health issues would you have? You grew up in paradise, you know, and that's the thing. Even it's not necessarily your surroundings that will affect your mental health. Do you know what I mean? It's something else.
Yeah. Well, I even look around my family and I think, where did all this come from? Yeah. Because my thing when I was early on, was I had anxiety, and I get a little annoyed now, and someone sort of got on my case about it. Like, I've never felt, when I talk about anxiety, people talk about it now, and even back then, I remember when I was in my 20s, like, I say that like I'm 60 now. Even so, like,
yeah, you only one.
Yeah. No, never you mind, Richard. Even back when I was in my 20s, like, and going through this anxiety, my anxiety was so severe, these panic attacks and stuff,
right,
that when other people would talk about it and they would describe it, I would think, I don't think you're having the same experience as me. Mm. Like, this is really debilitating, like physically,
yeah, right,
crazy. Like, I thought I was losing my mind. And
what would happen?
Well, you know, it's weird how it started. I'm trying to think. When I was about 18, I was really like coming out of this period in my teen years when I was in high school where, man, it's so complicated. I don't know. Mm. It's like I went through this thing in my teen years, which is like, I just got obsessed with, like I almost had like an eating disorder when I was like in my teenage years.
Oh, really?
Like, well, because I remember this is how it was like, I'll just do quickly. All I remember is like when I hit about 13 or 14, the men around me all appeared to have gone to some secret room where they took steroids and turned into these animals. Everybody was getting hair and muscles all kinds of places. And I'm looking around like it's just, I was like a firecracker that just didn't,
yeah,
you know, it's like, I felt like I was 14. I was like, the fuse has been lit. When is this going to pop? Like, This guy's got abs. He's 15 years old. Look at his. What the hell is going on here? And they were all like having sex. I'm just like, what's going on? So then I remember, like, I sort of started to think, okay, I need to like work out. So I got into that, and then that was like a like. I got really perfectionist about that. And I remember I just sort of disappeared. I sort of disappeared from the social groups. I also got grounded around that time for like drinking. It was weird, man. All these things happened that separated me. I spent a whole year not really connecting with the social group. Okay.
Yeah.
And
right.
then when I came back to reality a little bit, like everyone had moved on and I didn't fit in anywhere. I wasn't cool, and I was like in my head now, like, and I couldn't be as funny and natural with these popular kids. So then I sort of got ostracized. Anyway, so then I started just bouncing around to different groups. I just like bounced around to all these groups. I was like hanging with the punks, and then I was over here with the stoner kids, and with the stoner kids, I started doing drugs all the time. So
yeah, right.
Now I'm on drugs. Anyway, that was a long way to get to the point. That whole thing was a long roundabout way to say I'm on drugs at 18. So I remember I did a few drugs that just didn't mesh well with me. And then I just had to stop. Like I couldn't, I tried to smoke a joint one day and I had this like really bad panic attack and that was it.
Yeah.
And all of these things are negatives, but at the same time, they were all positives because in a weird way, that scared me off drugs at 18, and I've never done drugs since.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, so I just stopped forever. But over the years, I sort of had this like residue anxiety, and they would just get worse and worse. They would just start compounding. And I remember the panic attacks would get to the point that I remember one time we were driving to Palm Springs to see my parents, and I was in the car with my sister and my brother, and we'd been drinking the night before, so I had a bit of a hangover. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, and I was drinking coffee, and I remember we're in the middle of the desert, and I just start thinking, if you had something go wrong right now, like something physically, there's no hospitals around.
Mm.
And then my mind just started going crazy.
No, why?
To the point I just lost it. And I mean, I actually had my sister pull the car over, and I was just walking in the desert while they're standing at the car, and I'm on the phone. Different people are talking to me, trying to calm me down. Like they were calling random people that
right.
I was just like, I need to talk to this guy. And I'm just walking around in the desert. My whole body is like flipping out. You know, it's a panic attack, you know?
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, my family was so like they had never experienced anything like that. Yeah. And my sister, listen, bless her heart, she just it was just so foreign to her. She just thought it was the equivalent of like watching someone go literally insane.
Yeah. And there's nothing, and you're just looking, because I imagine when you're in the middle of it, you're not Russell, you're this version, and you're like, what the fuck, where is this coming from?
Well, and it was the ultimate, like, what people now talk about, you know, mental health and how we're very kind to it. But, dude, at the time, that it was the worst, because with something like that, you're trying to tell them something's wrong. And to someone who is not in any way in tune with that, they're looking at you like, there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing wrong. I'm looking at you. You're not dying. You're physically fine. And that just makes it worse.
I was going to say, yeah. Then you're not listening to me, and then you get frustrated with that.
I'm in the desert, and I'm walking around in the desert, and then there's the after effect of that, where I finally do. We get in the car, we get there, and then I just sort of lay down for a day, but the whole family around you, you know, is, and they're trying to be understanding, but you're just that. It was a further intensification of that, like, this, I'm like this other, you know, this weirdo that, you know, and then you're walking around the whole vacation, like you're, you know, the like in a Hollywood movie, I would have had like a hospital gown on and bandages on my wrist, and they'd been like, oh, there's There's the middle child.
Oh, yeah. And do you feel it coming? Do you still have them? Do you feel them coming on? And do you know how to deal with them when they're coming?
Well, so the weird thing was, I remember I read Steve Martin's book, and he was the first person to, like, I thought, yeah, he knows what I'm talking. That was so great, because when I started stand-up, you know, I read that book, and he says in the end of the book, he says he started getting panic attacks. I couldn't believe it. It was so...
Mm.
Like, just the empathy, just to be like, oh, my God, yes, this guy too. Yeah. And then the way I started dealing with them, because I would get them all the time, I'd be driving sometimes, and I would get one, and it was just like, holy shit, I'm going to, like, implode. I would just ride them all the way. Mm. You know, I had to work it out. I was online. I'd like, learn how to do it. And the trick is you just got to grit your teeth. This is probably a really, like... American sort of way to deal with it, but I would just take it all the way. Like, instead of fighting it, I would go, okay, all right, then I'm gonna die, and I would ride it all the way in. And then once you do that, your brain, you sort of train your mind to be like, well, nothing happened.
You're
and then
right, yeah.
You lose the fear of it. So I was actually able to get over them, but I remember. And sometimes I look back and, like, actually am able to be, like, appreciate that I got over it, because I remember at the time thinking, this is never going to go away.
Mm.
This is like, I'm afflicted with this for the rest of my life. And so the fact that I haven't had one in like 10 years.
Okay.
And maybe once in a while one will come, like, it'll just sneak up and I can zap it really quickly.
Mm. Do you remember what it felt like when you're in the midst of it, like this, that one in the desert? Can you remember what it felt like? Did it feel, I mean, obviously you're in the middle of, you're panicking. Can you remember, you know, what the world looked like around you while you're in the midst of that? Did it feel like it was all like sort of falling in on you, or?
Yeah, it was like, yeah. I mean, this is the thing. Like my mind is not very grounded in reality. Okay. And so, like, maybe that helps me in comedy, you know. I feel like the things that make us almost impossible to function in the real world are the exact things that benefit you in, like, creation and performance. So, like, my mind would, like, I was, like, hallucinating. I mean, I would almost, like, I would literally think, yeah, like, I'd be like, almost like how you hear people talk about, what if we're living in a matrix, man? That's what I would think. I'd be like, I'd be like, nothing is real. Like, like the world around me was like crumbling. I was almost like, this is all like simulacra. Like, this is not. Yeah, it was bizarre. Yeah. That's what I mean. It was bizarre thoughts like that. And it would just culminate in this panic. Like, sometimes I would just get on a train of thought. Like, I would start ruminating about the vastness of the universe.
Yeah. You know?
So I'd just be like sitting in my car and just start thinking, we're like on a planet in this universe. And then I would try to fathom how large that was. And then I would just freak out. I mean,
Yeah.
I remember
my ex-wife, I might have said this on here before, but I said, we were talking about the universe, and I was like, you know, it's just getting big. And we were talking about creation, and I'm like, yeah, but this is, it's always expanding. It's just, it grows. It's not, there wasn't one person created it. It just seems like it was naturally just, it just expands and it gets bigger. And she's like, yeah, but what is it expanding into? Like, what's beyond the expansion? And I just went, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And I spiraled. For ages. Even now, I still think about it. I go, yeah, what the fuck does it expand? What's it expanding into? Of course you're going to freak out with this shit. You know?
You're triggering me.
Yeah. And, so, and as I said it, I'm like, shit, hang on a minute. I don't need to stop. But that,
I'll be the first person to have an actual attack on the podcast.
Yeah. When I say, this is about mental health, this is actually, I'm creating bad mental health.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, we didn't have podcasts back then, kids. Like, that's the thing.
Mm.
We would just sit, I would just sit in my car and contemplate the vastness of the universe until I lost my mind. But if I could have just popped earbuds in and distracted myself.
Yeah,
man. I mean, that sometimes it is that simple, man. I mean, I'm a big fan of distraction. Because that's the other thing. And that's the thing I learned through, like, meditation and stuff. Is, like, your brain is as complicated as it is. It's also, you know, at its core, it's like this, it's this muscle that can be trained. Mm. It really can, like Pavlov, you know, with the ring and the bell.
Yeah.
It actually can be solved with very sort of non-mystical practices. Like every time you kind of freak out, like watch something you like on TV, like associate this feeling with good feelings and yes. shit like that. So,
yeah. Absolutely. I know when I felt, yeah, I take myself off. I put on an album that I know I'm comfortable with. That I know every song, every bit of it. But I know just listening to that for a bit will just make me just chill out for a little while and stop my, because my brain, like many people's, like Doug Stanhope does that bit about the carnival kicks in as soon as you lay your head on the pillow.
Yeah,
and that happens to me all the time.
It's sure,
just
yeah.
that tombola of just fucking things. And do you remember you said that thing to that girl when you were 9? You're like, well, she doesn't remember that. Why am I remembering that? Why am I worried about that? And it's just off I go. And then, yeah, there's music playing and there's all manner of fucking shit. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot. I get that a lot. And I really have to, like these days, it's always in the shower. I'll just be like having a shower and then all of a sudden I just remember something from 30 years ago and I go, oh, and it's like, what? Let it go. Like, let it go. That's why Facebook, like when I started stand up and you got to get Facebook and all that, that's why I immediately hated it. I immediately didn't like social media from the get go because I didn't like these people that would come out of the woodwork to be like, hey, it's me. And I'd be like, oh, man, you come with so much baggage. Like, I've blocked you out of my mind.
Yeah, there's a reason why we don't talk.
Yeah, like, hey, it's remember me from high school? And I'm just like, ah. And it's like, that just ruined my Wednesday. I'm like, oh, great. Yeah, thanks a lot. You're remembering everything I associate you with now.
I've had it the other way where I've thought I've upset somebody, and it's been on my mind for years. And then when that person pops up, I go, hey, hey, this is nice. Why? I thought you would never speak to me again because of blah, blah, blah. And they go, what are you talking about? And I've just built up this thing in my head that I've really been out of order and said something really bad and they've never spoken to me again. But it was just a case of two human beings just kind of drifting apart.
Oh, you know what the truth is the times you've really fucked someone off or been an asshole, you don't remember or even know you did it.
Yeah, right.
You know, the amount of people who've come up to me and said, yeah, the first time I met you, this is what you did. And I'm like, there's no way I did that. There's no way I did that. And then I'm like, well, if you think about it, when you're like in the city, for example, and someone like just walks by and pushes you off the street and they just keep walking, like they, you know, you can be like, oh, that guy's a dick. But actually, that guy didn't even know he did that.
No.
And you've done that 100 times. So that's, you know, I don't know. That's,
yeah, man. Yeah.
Those are the times probably.
yeah, I do.
Oh, like
I do,
I'll tell you, Jared Christmas told me when I first met him that he came into the green room. You know, he always changes his shirt before he goes on.
Yeah.
There's no way I said this. He says that I said to him, don't even know him, when he took his shirt off, I said, what did I say? I said, wow, you are, oh, fucking hell, what did I say? I said something to the effect of like, something like he's, I said, you're deceptively fat. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, wow, it didn't look like it was going to be that much of a mess. Until I mean, there's
but you
no,
didn't. You were coming from a good place by the sounds of it.
I was like, I think I was like nervous in the Comedy Store green room, trying to like rib each other. But when you're nervous, like when you're nervous, that kind of teasing comes out so bad.
Oh, I've been there, man. Yeah.
You know, everyone's sort of busting each other's balls, and then you try to be like, yeah, fuck you. And it's like, oh, man.
I have shut down so many banter sessions like that. Everybody's chipping in. And then I'll just say something so inappropriate that just everyone just kind of wanders off. And I'm like, ah, shit, yeah,
I remember one time, I remember I was in a car, this is like a long time ago, this is one that will return to me in the shower, and I love this guy now, but everyone was bantering, but I was nervous, and he said something about, people love me, and I go, yeah, I mean, I think you think they actually like you, and the car just went dead silent, and he said, and I'll never forget, he went, wow, that's the meanest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was like, oh man, and I was just like, I'm just nervous. I didn't come out with the right sugar on top.
And you should be able to turn around and go, dude, I fucked that right up. I'm really sorry.
But that's the thing, because I was nervous. I just thought, I think it's better just let that hang.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? But then, then that manifests into something else, and then there becomes a wall now.
But he wouldn't remember it. You know, he probably wouldn't even remember that, because we hung out so many years more after that. But, you know, that's something that'll just, like, pop up and bother me. I really try now to let that stuff go. There's a lot of that, man. Like, that's just... And I catch it sometimes... Like, I'll catch it a lot, like, that it just swirls around in the back of my mind, and I just think that is so unnecessary and unhealthy that you have, like, sometimes I'll think, wow, you have a lot of that shit swirling in the back of your brain that essentially is just this voice telling you all the ways you've fucked up.
Yes.
And I'm like, what? Why is that on constant loop?
I've got that. I have to go.
Rarely.
Dude, I get memories pop up. I go, why do I lug that around? Mm-hmm. Nobody else, like you said, the other person involved doesn't even remember. This is probably a different version for what actually happened. But, you know, through time, your memories change a little bit, don't they? And I'm lugging this shit around. What am I doing? I have to physically go, right, just fucking bin that off. Get rid of that, because there's no point. And you're feeling bad about that. You would, however old you were, it's gone now.
Yeah, well, I meditate a lot. And I think that's the thing that you get from meditation is that, like, it's not about, oh, I'm going to change that. It's just noticing it.
Yeah.
Like, noticing it is the battle, because you just, to be able to, because if you're so in it, like, you're just so in the thick of it, that you don't even know it's happening, that's when it's bad, because you believe it. But when you're able to see it and go, that's just this weird negative loop that plays in my brain, and then you just sort of move on, you know, that really lessens the blow, to just be like, and then don't ruminate on, whoa, why do I think that way? Just let it go, man.
It's
just the way it is. Like, not that thing about training the brain. Yeah, the self-flagellation. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you're like, why are you doing that? Just allow yourself to be happy.
I read a great book once when I was living in LA. I had this problem because stand-up is all about confidence, and so and it's so much a mental game, almost to an annoying degree, that the guy who believes in himself the most and has the best attitude, he'll do the best on stage. I've seen it a million times. Like, if you go up there with just this, like, this actual genuine love in your heart, you know, maybe you're just having a great day, you're invincible.
Yeah, true.
You're just invincible up there. And I remember I was having trouble with that, because just for whatever reason, you know, like, I'm a perfectionist too. So you get off stage and no matter what, you just, I did that wrong. Oh, why did I hold the mic?
You do that. We've gigged together and you've smashed it. And then you come off and you're like, yeah, but I should have. And I'm just sitting there going, how the fuck did you come up with all that stuff? Because you were talking about earlier about not being... your brain isn't grounded in reality, and you can go, and that's what makes you really good at what you do. Like, you just get up there and you just talk, and all this stuff just comes tumbling out, and I'm just sitting there and I'm like, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but when you're in the zone and when you see a comedian in the zone like that, you go, fuck me, this is fucking blistering. And then you come off. Terry Alderton does this as well. And you come off, and then you're like, nah, yeah, it was all right. Are you fucking kidding? They were nearly stood up halfway through your set or halfway through what you were doing. And you're like, yeah, but I wasn't feeling it.
Yeah, you know? Terry.
Yeah,
that's weird. I actually said that to you. I've gotten a lot better with that, but like Terry was someone, I can't remember if this was on a podcast or he said it to me when we were just talking, but he said something to me once. I was like, wow, then I really need to get a handle on this, because he said he'll get a standing ovation and walk off feeling bad about it. And I thought, well, at that point, that's on you.
Yeah.
Like that. As at that point, that is a mental disorder. I mean, not to like shame or anything, but I'm just, because I feel I've had the same thing. That's like, at some point you got to get a hold on it and just be like, you know what, man, like put it into perspective. Because all you're doing is, it's an indication of your own ego thinking that you're important and that what you do is so important that it needs to be perfect, when in reality, it's really beneficial to genuinely try to understand the perspective of the audience, which is that you're just this thing that they're going to do on a Saturday night. Nobody is thinking about it as, like, see, that's the thing we think, because a lot of us stand-ups are, we're not just performing at a comedy club. We are on a mission to be these great comedians, and we're on this journey. These people are just, this is just what they're doing.
You're just part of their evening
before they go to All Bar One. And that is great. Like, you need the audience. That's the thing, is I've always, like, I feel like if you're ever in a state where you hate the audience, there's something going on with you. Because as much as it's like, it can be annoying, their indifference, you need that element. Because imagine if they took you as seriously as you take yourself. I mean, it'd be a Stuart Lee gig. No. it would, you know what I mean?
So. Yeah, I know what you mean, man. Yeah, that would be no fun for anyone. Imagine that. We all think this is the most important thing that any of us have ever done. And it's
it's kind of grounding for them to just be like, yeah, you're I don't know, the audience almost represents the cold, indifferent universe.
It's the reality, isn't it? It's like, we think it's everything, and then they're like, yeah, you're just part of a thing we're doing.
Yeah, but if you battle that cold, indifferent universe, you're going to have problems. But if you just sink into it, and
yeah,
then there you go, baby. the book I read when I was in LA, I read this, and I just found this book randomly at the library, and books are really important to me. I stopped doing drugs, and then when I was 26, I stopped drinking. That probably also, again, about basic physical thing, like that obviously probably had a huge hand in me not having anxiety anymore. I mean, you can't be like, oh, I'm having anxiety, and then I think Sean Walsh had a great bit about this too, where he just talks about, he thought he was depressed in his 20s, but he realized he had never, all he needed to do was eat an orange. And it's fucking genius. Because like, it is that simple sometimes. Like, you're like, well, let's see. I drink a fucking malt liquor 40 every day and I have one meal. Why is my brain chemistry a bit off? And like, I just remember I got, so, but I quit all that. And then what was great is when I quit that, and I always tell this to people who, because some comics know on the circuit that I don't drink, like, or do drugs or anything. And so they'll ask me sometimes, like, how to get, you know, on the wagon. And I'll just be like, well, you know, it's hard, but you create this vacuum in your life and you'll start to fill it with these other things that you essentially get addicted to, but they're positive addictions. You know, like for me, I just filled it with like reading and shit. Like, I just loved reading. So I got this book, and it was called On Confidence.
Okay.
By this lady, Sheena Rankin. And it was just this random book. And this is what's beautiful about books, man. I just picked this random book up, and it almost sounds corny. I mean, it does sound like a corny book, but completely helped me. There was so much good stuff. And one of the best things about it that was so applicable to stand-up was basically it's just identifying how you shit on yourself. And one of the things I got from it is like, when you get off stage, and I did this for years, just the first thing you do is think of, before you start going, I did that wrong, this is bullshit, why did I do that? Just think of three things that you did right. You did correct. And I'll tell you what, it really wakes you up to how negative your brain is when you can't, like, it's so impossible to think of one good thing. And you just think, this isn't, wow, this is crazy. Because especially if you've had a good show.
Yeah.
And your brain is almost like, I know mine was in the beginning. It was so ready to just dump on myself that it was like, I couldn't even get it to think of one good thing. But then after you do that for a while, you kind of like train yourself. So you think of three good things you did right. And then once you've done that, you can do three things that in the future that you want to do better.
Yeah.
And it's a very positive way to look at it. It's not three things that you go, you're an asshole. It's three things that you're making a plan in the future to go, oh, do this a little bit better, do that a little bit better. But you train your brain to be like, to kind of like, your first instinct isn't you're a dick.
Yeah.
You know, you get off stage and your first instinct is to go, oh, that was, you did that one thing. You tried that new thing. And that, you know, you implemented that from last. So,
yeah,
that was big, man. That was like a really big thing. And it helped me kind of get out of that loop.
That's brilliant. Because I've been guilty of that. I think we all have. I think everybody, not just in comedy, I think everybody does that. We tend to just kind of come away from situations and go, oh, fuck, I could have done that better. I could have done that. And not really, like you say, focusing on any good stuff. And I think we do. But then this came up in Ruby Wax's book. It said the reason we err on the side of negativity is because it used to be our survival system. That was our survival instincts. That was how it kept us alive, by not trusting everything, you know?
Yeah.
So we've still got that residue that we're dealing with, still that, oh, yeah, but at any minute a tiger might come out from behind a truck and eat me, you know? And that's, yeah. So we do tend to kind of go towards the negatives.
Yeah, I do wonder how my ancestors survived. I think about that sometimes. I think we were just holed up in a cave somewhere while everybody else was fighting or doing whatever.
We were like, yeah, Mr. Pink all over again.
Yeah, that's how I survived. Like the Hicks cavemen were just in a cave somewhere like, I'm not going outside, man. Forget it. Forget that, dude. I'm working on these cave paintings and they're not good enough. This is shit.
Oh man. And that's the other thing as well, is that I know other people have said, I want to quit drinking. They go, okay, yeah, I know it's difficult, and you know, but then they're like, well, then I won't have anything to do. And I think that's what people, like you said, people worry about that, about there being nothing. Like they kind of drink to block out the negativity, and then they drink, and then the next day they're all negative because they're all hungover and they're down, and the blood sugar levels are fucked, and they haven't eaten and all that sort of shit, and it just becomes this spiral, doesn't it? And then they worry like, fuck, if I don't drink, what am I going to do? And,
yeah.
You know, and that's, well, you know, you got to...
That's the thing. I don't know how to prescribe... Like, I don't know how to prescribe lifestyle choices or anything to anybody else. So all I ever do is... Because I do act in a very... I do what works for me. And if other people... And I know that I'm a very specific personality type. I like solitude. I'm a loner. I kind of am totally cool with just being on my own. I probably prefer it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I love like just hanging out, reading books by myself with a cup of coffee. Like, so that really works for me. So I don't know if that works for other people, but I know it's hard for people to quit drinking and doing all this stuff. But that's where it goes back to, again, like a negative turn into a positive. Like, although that thing in high school, when I got so obsessed with like fitness and all that, like, in a, that taught me discipline though.
Yeah.
Because I was able to do it and it was really hard. And then just learning that one discipline, I apply that all the time now. Like I can do shit. Like I can say, okay, I'm going to do this regularly for 3 months or whatever. Like I've got a kind of a willpower. So, I mean, for anyone who's like thinking they want to get off that shit, like once you do one thing like that in your life, like if you are able to quit drinking, dude, it opens up this whole world of like possibility where you're like, wow,
if I can do that, I can do this.
Yeah. Consistency, you know, like being consistent with anything. And then, it's just something that became like, I think you just find things that you know, that excite you. Like you, I knew a lot of, I had a friend back in San Diego who used to do heroin and he stopped and he was clean. When I met him, he was clean. And he had the same thing. You know, he got into marathon running. And you see that a lot with people who give up these things that were so abusive to them in their lives. They take that addiction because that energy, that addicting energy is actually a really powerful, positive thing if you point it at the right objective. Yeah. And you'd see that all the time, man. These guys would give up these drugs or something, and then they would just get addicted to something like running.
Yes.
But it was so positive, and they were so excited to, you know, to do it. But it would give them that same charge. You know, they need something to be addicted to. They need something to,
yeah,
to go after, like a hobby or whatever. And
yeah. That's it. There's plenty of comedians that we know that have gone from doing, just being party animals, and then suddenly, like, there's Mickey D, who's out in Australia.
Yeah.
And he, when I first met him, he was a party animal. You know, I'd never met him before. He rang me up. He said, "Oh, we're going to go and do this gig. You're driving, but I'm going to bring food. What do you like?" And I'm like, "Oh, no, I'll be all right. I'll sort some stuff out." And he's like, no, I'll sort it out. And he brought this trunk full of food, and we just ate and just all day. And then every time I saw him in Edinburgh, he'd be fucked doing this, that, and the other. And then fast forward a few years, he was on that SAS program on the TV. Like, and now he's this, like, marathon runner, and he runs up mountains, and he just runs everywhere. And you're like, fucking hell, yeah. What a turnaround.
Yeah, man.
It's incredible.
And yeah. And stand-up was that's the thing. When I quit drinking, I drank as a stand-up for about 6 months, and it was a shit show. I was, like, into Doug Stanhope. I'd be on stage with, like, a Miller Lite being like, "Well, fuck you, Mr. Bush." And like, well, no, actually, I started in the Obama years. Sorry. Hold on. Yeah. I just aged myself. Yeah, I'm like, hey, fuck you, Roosevelt.
But you look so well.
Yeah. Stand-up was like the best thing to come into my life at that time, because I often feel like when I talk to people who start comedy, there's certain things they say to me that I'm like, "Oh, I don't know if this is for you," because the best thing about stand-up for me is that our lives are completely flipped.
Yeah.
So as someone who's going to give up drinking, some people might be like, "Yeah, but you're always in bars." No, it's the complete opposite. Like, the hardest thing for me was when I was drinking, weekends were all about going out and getting pissed.
Yeah.
With my, like, punk rock friends, and we would just get hammered. As soon as stand-up came in, Friday night is suddenly Monday morning for us.
Yes.
So you're going to, I still love that, man. It's like the best for me. It's like you're going to work while everyone else is going out to get pissed. So you have something to do now.
Yeah.
Instead
man.
Of going to the bar, you have Friday and Saturday night to, and it benefits you to be lucid and to be funny. So
yeah.
I don't know, man.
Oh man, when I started, I remember I was so, because I'm chronically shy as a person, and it took me, I don't even know what possessed me to admit, to agree to doing the first gigs. I just, something in me just went, just fucking do it. Just do it. Otherwise you're just going to be just shy forever and you'll never know. I just kind of went, I'm going to go and do it. And now I'm still shy in certain areas, but I'm not as bad as I would have been. And it's just having that thing to do at the weekend where I don't remember the last time, even before that, I had jobs I worked at weekends. So I've never really had that, going out on the weekend and getting hammered. It was always other times.
Well, I used to do it on the weekdays too.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I had this office job where they had a, they had this like room where they tried to, it was called like the break room, where you just supposed to sit for 10 minutes if you want. And the amount of times I got told, "Don't sleep in there." Because they would just walk by and I'd be just like passed out in my tie and my stained shirt. Honestly, man.
But this is the thing. I was saying this to Jade. Like, she was struggling. She's writing this script, and she kept they were going, right, we're going to give you, I'll give you a call at 9:30 or wherever it was in the morning and blah. And she was getting really, really stressed and worked up. And she said, I can't do it. She'd sit at the desk during the day. And I'm like, but you don't do 9 to 5. That's not when you function. You're not that. You need to be, she said, I come alive at night. And I'm like, yeah, because that's when there's this pressure during the day that we feel we should be doing something. You know, you've got to be productive and you've got to be working and you've got to be doing this and all your admin and blah, blah, blah. But a lot of us don't fit into that.
100%.
And then in the evening when it's like all the offices have shut.
Yeah.
So you're like, all right, so there's not going to be anyone chasing me now. Oh, now I can chill.
I 100% refute all of that. Exactly. That attitude. And I think that whatever culturally we've shifted, you know, today where it's all about productivity.
Yeah.
Like I have this theory, you know, that, okay, people have become so corporate in general. I feel like this whole idea that I'm a brand is like, and I think Zadie Smith beat me to the punch on this, which is annoying because I was saying it before I read this, but that this idea that, oh, AI robots are going to take over. And it's like, we're kind of already getting there where people are calling themselves brands. They're, you know, treating themselves as if they're these like content creating, analytic watching. The amount of comedians who have told, like, honestly, if I sit down and have a cup of coffee with you and you start talking about analytics, I'm looking around like, What the fuck's going on? Are we in a board meeting? What's happening?
Yeah.
Not that I am like, because I think when I talk like that, maybe someone who's more industry plugged in would say, oh, so this is like one of those, you know, comics who's just going to drift down river and live on a boat one day. No, I'm not like that. Nothing wrong with living on a boat. But I'm just saying there's this attitude of like, yeah, you got to be busy, busy, busy. I'm like, look, get things done.
Yeah.
You can hit big objectives, but this idea that we have to constantly be moving, again, it's just another lie that I feel like going back to living in America, the system in general has this way of just trying to get you to grind and to drain yourself. And I refuse it all the time. I also completely refuse to be unhappy. I refuse to, you know, we're told, like, you see these comedians as well. I keep saying comedians because that's my reality, but
yeah,
people who, you know, until you really make it as a comedian, then you're kind of unhappy. Fuck all that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to live that way. I said a long time ago, I just said, like, look, as long as I'm, what do I really want? Like, I think everybody should have a base level of happiness. And you should say, look, what do I actually want out of life? Because, you know, it's like with the Edinburgh Festival. Everyone's like, I want to win the Edinburgh Festival. And I'm like, and they think that their problems will be solved. Sometimes I say, well, how much money is it to win the festival? And they don't know. Mm-hmm. And I say, see, in a weird way, that's going for 10 grand is a much more healthy objective than just assuming that you're going to be anointed and then you're going to be marched down the M1 and people are going to just shower you with praise. That's how you set yourself up for failure because, you know, it's like those famous people who get famous and then are unhappy because they think, because they're trying to fill this void with something that's not tangible.
Yeah.
Like this idea that you're just going to reach this love. It's like, dude, you could, If you're not going for the 10 grand, then I can tell you right now what you're actually trying to achieve is something else that could be achieved right now. You've got this, you're not happy with something. You don't feel like, you feel like you need to be told you're worth something. And the way that I take that back to what I meant about not refusing to be unhappy is like this idea that living a free existence and being able to create and live an artistic lifestyle is in itself not enough.
Yeah.
And that's the lie that you're fed. That's, and not to slag my parents, I love my parents, but that's sort of when you tell your parents I'm a comedian and they say, or your family members, and they're like, but you haven't been on Netflix.
Yeah.
So I don't think you are. And it's like, well, I'm not going to, I would love, hey, I'm open to Netflix. Like, get, come at me. But I'm not going to, I'm, that's again, that's that American lie of it's about the prize at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
No, dude, like my base level, I decided a long time ago was like, if I can, because I saw guys like that when I was coming up, you know, you'd see these guys who you're an open micer and they're doing like colleges or something and making a living. But they'd be like that road comic of like, fuck this, man. This is, and I was like, I understand it's hard. And I'm not saying you should just be like, oh, I'm good at this level. But I said to myself, dude, if you get there, just enjoy the fact that you're free, man. Yeah. You're not in an office anymore. Like, don't be able to not take a breath, look around and be like, fuck, man, this is incredible. Because it is incredible. Like, to be able to be doing what you love on any fucking level, dude, is a win.
Yeah.
And that's why all this, like, that's why social media is unhealthy and celebrity in general is because people, when I see people have to take a photo of themselves on vacation, I'm like, that's the fucking lie. You think that if it's not seen by other people and validated on some level of celebrity, that it didn't actually, that it's not worth anything.
It's not anything. Worth anything, yeah, exactly.
And so social media trains you to do that, you know, and that's why I think it's, you got to engage with it very carefully.
Oh, God, yeah. That comes up all the time on here. It's causing so many problems. But also, like you say about being fed the lie, where they've got, society has now got us believing that the job is everything. Like, not comedy, I'm talking about any kind of work. They're like, your job is the most important thing about your life. And you need to, like when you go and have an interview, and they ask you that stupid question, like, why do you want to join the company? And nobody can turn around and go, look, I just need a fucking job. I need a job so I can pay for my rent and I can feed my kids and I can do this. No one wants to go and work in a double glazing salesman place or wherever. No one wants to do these things, really. No one sets out to go, I really want to work in an office and I really want to work making a load of money for someone else that doesn't give a fuck about me. That's what I want to do. No one wants that. But yeah, it's that they're told that, yeah, you know, you've got the company line, you've got to follow the company line, and the company is everything and the job is everything. And, you know, they're making motorways wider, they're making train lines faster, but they're making apartments smaller. And it just feels like they're turning us into worker bees. You know?
Well, yeah, but if you have the balls, and I'll expand that as well, and the ovaries, the mammaries, if you, like, that's what I mean, you can find a way out. Like, I remember when I was working in an office in San Diego, and even then, with no comedy or whatever, I would have these ideas. I'd think, you know what, you could, you're an adult, like, you're an adult, and I would just think, you could walk out of here right now, buy a plane ticket, and go to Thailand. I would just get off on these thoughts. I'd be like, you could do that.
Yeah.
What is stopping you? You can literally fucking do that. And like, I think people think that and they go, yeah, but no, like, do it. It's exhilarating. Like, it's fucking exhilarating to just be like, when you realize the freedom you have over your own, you know, your own free will to it's,
Well, I did that when I was a kid. I've said this before. I used to do a bit about it. I used to say that there, you know, I used to be at a job, and I'd be like, "This is shit. This is shit. These people are shit. I'm going to go to lunch and then never go back. I just leave." And there are still people waiting for me to come back from lunch from 20 years ago. Just like, that sandwich must be huge. Where the fuck did he go, man?
Dude, I did so much of that. I've probably lost like 30 or 40 jobs in my life. And one time I was working at Pizza Hut, and I was living with my parents, so I didn't want them to know I quit. So I just dressed up in the uniform for like 3 weeks and put the Pizza Hut thing on my car, the delivery sign.
Yeah.
And would just drive to my friend's house. For like 3 weeks, my parents thought I worked at Pizza Hut. So many jobs like that.
But I never felt, when I did it, I never felt, woo, freedom, I'm out. I always felt like I was just letting everybody down. I'm like, even though they were, I didn't want to work for them. I just didn't like them. I'm like, oh, you're wankers, man.
Yeah,
and then I felt bad.
Yeah, a lot of comics are like that. I mean, yeah, like those sort of stop-start years, like a plane trying to take off in the beginning, yeah. Mm. And I think if you like your job, that's the thing. If you love your job, like, great. Like, yeah. I'm just saying there's a way to, I don't know, like, there's this idea, like, a lot of people have this idea that you have to do something. There's all, that, I guess that's what I'm, what I've always felt is that there's this force, and it has nothing to do with the natural world. It's a societal force that from the beginning says there's things you have to do, and you realize that you don't.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really. You're like, well, why do I have to do that? I don't have to do, like, you know, they'll be like, you have to do this job, or you know, even when you start stand up, I know I've changed tack a little bit because you just learn to be a little bit. There's other things you learn about stand up being a business and an artistic endeavor. However much you don't want to, you can choose how you want to engage with either of them, but you should know the consequences. So yeah. Whatever, that's something new, whatever, that took me like 10 years. But what I'm saying is, oh fuck, I lost it. I started going off on social media. When you start stand up and they say you have to do this, you have to do social media, you have to do that, and it's kind of like, you don't have to.
No.
I mean, there are consequences either way, and you should reckon with those consequences depending on the choice, which will help you in the choice. But the idea that you just blatantly have to is a lie.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything.
No.
Like, you don't have to eat food. You're going to die. You don't have to eat it. I'm not sure that was the correct metaphor.
I get it, man. I get it. But there is that, it's that, because I just see us as animals, that we're just animals, really, and we're just more aware than other animals, and we've created this universe now. But it's like when I owed some money to some debt thing, and I was speaking to the woman, and I'm like, look, I can afford to give you this much. And she's like, well, that's not enough. We need the debt paid off in this time. And I'm like, why? She said, oh, that's just what we do. And I'm like, well, why do you do that? And she's like, yeah, well, we just, I'm like, no, as long as you get all the money, it doesn't matter how long it takes me to give it to you, surely. But it was all that, like, these restrictions that human beings put on themselves. Yeah. And I just see this, like the Matrix, yeah. I'm like, this is all fucked. None of this matters, man.
No, and it divides us.
Yeah.
Dude, I had the exact same thing where, like, I basically, I was at a bank in America, and they charge you. Like, if I get paid for a club in America, I have to cash the check in America. But if you're not with that bank, they charge you, like, whatever, $30 or some crazy shit.
Yeah.
And I just remember the girl kept telling me, I have to. And I said, yeah, exactly what you said. I just looked at her. I was like, you don't, though. Like,
yeah.
You don't actually have to do this. You're doing it. But I said, you, the teller, could, you know, you could let me slide here. I don't know.
Yeah,
I was getting all evangelical. I was like, free yourself from the chains of society, man. My mom was like, please, just, I'll pay it.
Yeah, that's it. We can afford to be these rebels against the system, but someone else has to pick up the check.
Yeah, that's the thing. You have to realize that, like, not everybody is so, you know, happy to just fucking get fired.
Yeah.
The world needs jobs, Worths, you know. I'm sure they serve a purpose, but
but it's that once you take that step back and really sit, you go, no, this, none of this is, in 100 years, anything I did and everything I said, it won't matter. It's just, I won't be here, be gone. And it's, you know, all the worries that I had, everything, I was like, oh, fuck, I've got to do this thing, otherwise that guy's going to be fucked off. None of us are going to be here. <It's> like, but then I start spiraling when I get like that. And then, because then you start going, well, what's the point of doing anything then? What's the point of buying any records? What's the point of buying shoes? You know what I mean? You start that nihilism, that kind of, what's the fucking point? And you wouldn't do anything then, would you?
Yeah, no, yeah. I definitely don't, like, subscribe to that level of why do we do anything? And no, that's all bullshit. I think that the point of it all is, It's like I said, I just like, I don't know. I guess it probably sounds, I don't know why I have to insert this caveat that it sounds wanky. I mean, who cares what it sounds like, but, that it's just to appreciate. And so I remember a long time ago, I remember, like, I always go back to, I don't know why I keep talking about Los Angeles, but it was such a defining sort of time for me, which is that, hold on 1 second, okay? Sorry.
Yes, sir.
Fucking computer's dying. Find a plug socket around here. We just moved into this new flat and I just plugged it into two plug sockets that didn't work.
So. Ah, shit, man. So you got to work out which ones do and don't. Or you'll find some weird random one that you flick on and off. And
well, I thought those worked, but... Anyway, we're back.
Yeah. We had one in our... We had one in the kitchen where in our flat. I'm like, what the fuck does this do? And then it turns out it heats the floor in the kitchen. Well, I didn't know that. Yeah,
fancy.
Yeah, man.
Didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, well, this is lovely, isn't it?
Kitchen floor heater.
Heating in the kitchen. It's like, wow, man.
Nice. You hear that, baby? We got to keep up with the Joneses.
Get some hot floors.
Yeah, the Wilsons got a heat. They got a hot kitchen floor.
We got to get two.
Jesus. Yeah, we're getting walls, ceiling. We're getting the whole bit. What do you think of that, Rich? Next time I see you.
Big hot house.
Yeah.
So yeah, how are you coping with everything that's going on at the minute? I mean, we've got the lockdown, we've got America on fire. You know, how are you coping?
I cope pretty well. Yeah. I think, like I was saying, I'll pull it back right before the plug socket gate. I have a general sort of, I don't know, I'm able to be pretty happy with, I'm able to kind of focus on what's going on immediately around me. I am very empathetic to the fact that a lot of people, I know that I'm okay with much more solitude and inactivity as other people. Like I can, and even I am starting to at times have trouble just sort of, you know, accepting that everything is on pause. Like,
well, they've taken away the other options, haven't they? So it's good that, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, I like being on my own, but then I think it makes it easier because you've got the option of going and meeting people and doing things. And now that's been taken away. So you've literally got solitude.
Yeah. And also just like things being on pause that I was, you know, realistic goals that I was enjoying, like, I don't know, trying to save up money and like for different things. And that was all going good. And now that's kind of like, you can't really do that because you've got to kind of, however you're, and we're lucky. I mean, like the way I feel totally lucky that wherever my career was at, it's enabled me to not have to struggle like other people were having to kind of go back to, you know, I was able to get through it. And but you can't, you've got to just kind of hoard what you've got. You can't really be spending a lot on anything, or and you don't even make plans for anything. Like my parents were going to come out and see us and that's not happening, and there's no, I don't know, it just feels weird. You don't really know where. And yeah, I mean, you can be really alone with your thoughts. I imagine, I mean, I've talked to some comedians when the lockdown lifted a little bit and I really felt bad for them because I thought it was kind of like, I feel like I've gone through a lot in my life where I've trained these, I've really worked at my mental health. And so I feel equipped. And some people I talk to, I just think, damn, yeah. Like to be at that stage where you're kind of pretty fragile, this must be this would not be fun.
No, not at all. I know I've spoken, there's been people that have messaged me online after listening to this, and they're just going, you know what, I just liked hearing the fact that I wasn't the only one struggling with it. You know, there's some comfort in that, knowing, because everybody else always seems to be more, everyone seems to have a handle on everything, and everyone's life is just so, and everyone's smashing it, and then you think you're the only one that isn't. And you're the only one that's not handling this weird shit that's going on. Or you feel bad because you go, fuck, there must be something wrong with me because everyone else is handling it. And that's not the case. We're all just working out how best to handle it, aren't we?
Yeah.
In our own way.
Empathy is like, to know someone else is going through it is such a powerful thing. I remember a long time ago, I remember some comic that I had started out with, I was just telling him something about, I'm thinking this and I'm thinking that. And it was like, I was having these, just whatever, beating myself up, all that kind of stuff. And I remember he just said something to me. He didn't even know what he was saying. He just said, oh yeah, there's this video online and this guy talks about that. And then he told me all about it. And it was such a revelation to me that this problem had been addressed and that this guy... and that this other comic also was going through it, that I hugged him. And I remember he was like, you know, because he didn't know we were having this deep conversation. He was just kind of talking to me.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, man, and I gave him a hug. And I remember he was like, oh, yeah, okay, man. And I was like, it's just a beautiful thing to...
Yeah, yeah. And it's understanding that sometimes we handle things weirdly, like you were talking about earlier about being nervous in green rooms and you might say the wrong thing. I had someone say, someone did it to me in Edinburgh, and I walked into the green room and he goes, you know what, you're wearing a tight t-shirt, but you're a big lad, but you're pulling it off. I don't know how. And I'm still going, you just call me fat. Like, what the fuck? But then you go, yeah, it was a weird gig and we were all kind of like, this doesn't look playable at all.
Yeah,
but luckily the MC, Jojo Sutherland, was fucking amazing. But yeah, it's that understanding that other people, we're all dealing with this stuff in our own way, and sometimes we say stuff we don't really mean it. And
yeah, that's the thing, man. Yeah. It's like that's empathy. Another thing that you learn is like really trying to get inside other people's head. Like I really do give people the benefit of the doubt. Like whenever we're hanging out with a bunch of comedians, like I know. Or any people. I'm like, I know what nervous energy looks like.
Yeah.
And so I give people a pass. The worst thing you can do is like, and you probably get this being shy. People often think shy people are stuck up.
Yeah, I get that. Aloof. I got called aloof.
Yeah, like they think you're just being a snob. And I've probably met, you know, and especially someone like you who's doing well, whether you are aware of it or not, to someone who's not, doesn't feel they're on your level, they would just think that they're not good enough for you. Whereas the first thing that I think of, or I try to when I'm around, like as I don't get offended, I just think this guy is probably nervous, and then or he's not like nervous to be around me, but he's just having that anxiety, or he's like, and then you just, if you just try to connect with people, it all melts, you know, like there's common ground I find with, like, sometimes they just need to know you're vulnerable. Like sometimes people will be aggressive to you because I can often tell when someone's perceiving me a certain way. You know, like if people don't know me, I remember when I first moved here, they're like, okay, American guy, he's an asshole, he's loud, he thinks he's hot shit. Just because my accent. And so I might like immediately connect with that person by saying something vulnerable, like with you, how I would be like, yeah, I thought I sucked tonight, or so I don't know, like not being self-deprecating, just trying to be like, hey man, here's some reality. And then next thing you know, you're having a great, you know, I've had that with like comedians where we don't get along at all, and then if you just show some vulnerability and try to connect on a deeper level, like you'll have a 3-hour conversation on a train with that guy and be like, oh, we just had to break each other's defenses down. Comedians are so afraid of like, I can't tell this guy I like him yet until I know that he likes me.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. So, by the way, speaking of being loud, I noticed halfway through the podcast that your producer turned my decibels down, which I thought was, hilarious.
You were peaking furiously.
They were going,
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah. I've been told that. For some reason, I hold a podcast mic like Henry Rollins on stage. I just screaming into it.
Like you're trying to strangle it. Fucking.
So have you been fighting against that as I knocked down the decibels? You're just getting louder and louder.
Yeah, I was trying to compensate. Must be heard.
Russell, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on, man. We were going to do, like alternate endings, like depending on the what happened with the election. Like
we're in crying or we're in really happy. I've just put on your screen, Rich.
Oh, wow, man. So Biden's 243. Trump's 214. But that was...
That's good, man.
Yeah.
That's good stuff, dude.
So then we were going to do like alternate endings, like if what would you, how you would be if Trump had won, or how, you know, it's, yeah, that's what we were going to do. But how do you feel?
I mean, if it's real, I mean, if it's, if we're going to do it genuinely, that's a bit funny. Yeah. I think it, that's a bit weird, but I think it's funny to acknowledge.
We'll keep all the endings in, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Trump won. Great job, America. I didn't doubt for a second this is what you were going to do. And, you know, hey, keep on keeping on. Never discount Americans' ability to vote against their own self-interest.
Yeah. It's like Brits, man. Brits will kick themselves in the nuts.
Yeah, I think I was just thinking this on the pod. I was thinking we should do a swap. Like, I don't even think the next president should be American. Let's get a Brit in there. And then just see how that I don't know. I think America could use, you know, your guys' attitude. And then we'll send you an American. And I think after that, you guys will be, you know, you'll go a little bit more liberal with your choices. You see what it can look like.
I think they should send the women in. Let the women do it.
Let the women in, man.
Men just wave their fucking dicks around all day. Let the women in.
It is true. I mean... Before this podcast, I was literally just waving my dick. I stand outside the people of Rochester and I just shake it.
I'm doing it now as I talk to you.
Yeah.
Just waving my dick around.
I can tell. That's how I get. that's another way I make other comedians comfortable. I mean, I know that's frowned upon now. No, I'm just joking.
That vulnerability.
I learned that from a great comedian named Louis C.K. You just sort of, it really, that's what people don't understand. He was just trying to make people comfortable.
Just being that this is me at my most vulnerable. You know? And Biden wins, man. Fuck.
Honestly, man, I think that if he wins, like... Yeah, I just think that people associate this whole era, this last 4 years, and especially the last year, just need to change, man. Like these, I don't know why everyone's got to be, there's this attitude that toughness, like everything's got to be fucking, I'm tough, I'm not a snowflake. And you know what? Everybody should watch the movie Goodfellas, because Joe Pesci's character, the whole moral of that movie to me, is that toughness will get you so far. And then if you watch, I'm actually serious about this. If you watch Martin Scorsese movies, the tough guy always gets it in the end.
Yes.
Because that's how far, because there's always someone tougher than you.
Yes.
So if you're just going to ride that, that's your whole tactic. Like I'm a badass. Well, you're going to get beaten with a baseball bat.
And left in a ditch.
Yeah, like it only gets you so far, you know? I think people are lying to themselves. I think there's this attitude, especially among men. I see it with, like, how many comedians do you know that do MMA?
So many.
What are you doing? Like, you don't know how to fight. You'll never know. Just admit you're a pussy. Trust me, it's much better for you just to, because I had that. I was like doing all these boxing MMA classes, and then I just realized I was like, you know, especially being around those guys, I was like, why am I doing this? Like,
yeah.
And I just sort of said, you know what? I'm funny. That's my thing. I'm a pussy. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
There's no We live in the modern world. There is never going to be, you know, some great battle where hand-to-hand combat is going to...
It's never going to be Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings out there.
Yeah, it's there's just like this attitude lately of... I see that a lot, like that it's all about being tough. And I think that, I mean, toughness is, it doesn't mean you can't be, like sometimes that, what they're trying to achieve is this confidence in their self. And sometimes that can be achieved by being honest about the fact that you're not tough.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
What you're trying to achieve is this sort of like, I'm this alpha. And it's like, sometimes the most confident dude in the room is the guy who's like, yeah, I can't fight.
Yeah.
I've met people like that who's like, wow, like this guy knows who he is. He's not the stereotypical. And if you go against that, you actually just, you're being dishonest and it just, it comes off kind of weird. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's
that's
a lot
it.
Of guys,
yeah.
a lot of guys come into green rooms after listening to 14 hours of the Joe Rogan podcast. And I'm like, listen, mate, just relax.
Take it down a few. Yeah. Yeah.
Take it easy.
You've ramped yourself up now, Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah. Wait. How'd you prepare for your gig today? I did 8 hours of jujitsu. Oh.
Cool. You're going to be relaxed and fun to be around.
Yeah.
Russell, man, this has been amazing.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. And where can we find you? Are you on the socials? Do you need anyone to find you?
Hey, find me.
Find you.
That's a whole. Yeah, I'm out there, man. I mean, I got a TikTok coming along now,
Woo-ee.
Rich. That's right.
Check you out.
I'm on all of them, man. I'm on all of them, and I'm putting some clips out, and there's a lot of stand-up out there that I'm pretty proud of, and I think we got a nice well-oiled machine going on. So
beautiful. So you're on YouTube and stuff.
Oh yeah,
YouTube,
I'm on all of them.
Everything.
I'm across the board, guys.
So check out Russell Hicks. Russell, this has been amazing, and I look forward to seeing you properly in the flesh.
You too, man.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.